The questions you always had. The answers you were never given. The place to seek the truth. Welcome to Veritas.
Tonight on Veritas, are we living inside a carefully crafted simulation? Suspend your disbelief as we explore a discovery that could reshape everything we think we know about reality itself. Our guest, filmmaker, entrepreneur, and psychonaut, Danny Goler, has pursued life's deepest mysteries with relentless passion. Since his youth, he has been captivated by the underlying structure of the universe. Now, he claims to have glimpsed the source code of existence through DMT and the unique lens of a 650 nanometer refractive laser, a profound revelation captured in The Discovery, his upcoming documentary. If you join me for my Sanitas interview with Dr. Rick Strassman, tonight's discussion elevates the conversation to an entirely new plane. Danny's findings suggest there may be a shared architecture beneath our reality, with over 100 participants consistently reporting visions of the same symbols, patterns, and even entities, an indication that DMT could be more than a personal experience. It may serve as a portal into a collective realm. Are these visions clues to a hidden order beneath what we perceive? A true Renaissance man, Danny has both physical and metaphysical prowess as a finalist on American Ninja Warrior, an artist, and a champion of holistic development. Tonight, we probe the boundaries of perception, consider the notion of a psychosphere structured by recurring symbols, and question whether conventional science is even capable of comprehending the depth of Danny's findings. If this reality is a simulation, we ask, who or what might lie beyond? As Danny puts it, your brain is simulating what you're seeing right now. This is not what reality looks like. This is a very tiny sliver of what your brain constructs into what you think is the physical world. The simulation is not just occurring by the laws of physics, but that somebody is actually simulating it. Danny Goler is coming up next. Welcome to the Veritas Project. I'm your host, Mel Hostelrich. If this is your first time listening, welcome home. To access tonight's full interview and all of our exclusive material, simply join the Veritas Plus family by clicking on the subscribe button at veritasproject.com. And while you're there, don't forget to check out the Veritas store for a range of great products, including focused life force energy. Experience the power of FLFE with a 15-day free trial today. No credit card required. If you're looking to get in touch with me, have a guest suggestion, or would like to provide feedback, simply click on the contact button on our website. Your thoughts and ideas are always appreciated. So sit back, relax, and enjoy tonight's program. His website is codeofreality.com, and we also have links to his social media sites. And to help us crack the code of reality, unlock the blueprint of existence and the secrets of our simulated world, directly from, I presume, Southern California, I'd like to welcome Danny Goler. Hello, Danny, and welcome. How are you?
I'm doing amazing. Thank you so much for having me on. I felt very important. I should, when I start doing public talks, I should have you just come and introduce me on stage. That would be great.
By the way, you're in Southern California?
I am, yes.
What part?
Pasadena.
Okay, Pasadena. Sure, that's what I thought. Well, you've had a very interesting journey, and I told you before, years ago I interviewed Dr. Rick Strassman, and I've had many friends who are considered to be psychonauts, who are trying to get me into this, and I haven't done it yet, but Rick, he really convinced me. All the stories of all his, you know, patients and what he did with DMT, the experiments, they were incredible. And ever since then, I've been looking for somebody to talk about this again, and I bumped into your future documentary titled The Discovery, and I was floored. So before we give me your background, can you tell the audience what they can expect from this upcoming documentary?
The documentary will be, originally it was supposed to be about the story of how the laser was discovered, all the ideas that I had about, you know, how it can potentially work and all of that stuff. But then as we were filming, it became clear that we want to make the movie a lot more than that. And I think now the main working guideline is to try and make this movie as much as possible about humanity and where we're going and what is this thing that we're all experiencing as this big shift really is versus all the ideas that people have about it. I would say that's a good summation of what the movie purports to be about.
Going back in time, I know that you spent a lot of time with your grandparents when you were growing up. And your grandfather, correct me if I'm wrong, but he was a physicist, correct?
He was, yes.
And you were asking me, he was telling you about black holes. And obviously, if you're a kid, you think black hole is going to swallow you. How did your conversation with grandfather start and how did he evolve into who you are today?
I think it was instrumental. And I think it was really the thing that formed who I am, if I didn't already come pre-built this way. But we all have some kind of a default mode, and sometimes it can be very specific, sometimes it can be more esoteric. Some people really care about relationships, other people care more about sports or technical things. For me, if I just sit down on the couch and stare into the ether, the thing that immediately springs into mind is what's outside of existence. I don't control it. I don't bring it about. I enjoy it, but that's where my brain goes automatically. And it has been this way since I can remember myself. All the way to the edges of reality, to what is this? Why am I versus anything else? These questions, they were things that basically were operating in me since I was literally 4 years old, 3 years old, as far as I can recall. And my grandfather was definitely very instrumental in that, at least in encouraging that behavior, if not in maybe seeding it. And yes, I think the first recollection I have ever hearing something really interesting about physics was about black holes. I wasn't so worried about them swallowing me, but I was definitely mesmerized by the grandiosity of it and how can this be? Just that phrase alone, like, how can this be? Right. And how does it actually look like to look at one? And because I always try to imagine them more like giant quagmires or, you know, enormous whirlpools in the middle of the ocean. You know, the ones that you see in books where they swallow ships. I don't know what the biggest ones are called. I know that depending on the size, they call them different things. I don't know what the biggest ones are called, but that's what I try to imagine in my head. Like, does it look like that in space? Now, of course, we know they're spherical and the event horizon is basically, it's a three-dimensional hole. But back then, that was the main operative. And like with many things, the things that really terrify us, they also fascinate us. And I think that's what kindled my interest in just more broadly thinking about reality as a thing that can be understood, and physics in particular. And in my early years, I got very interested in math and physics, and I was pretty good at it. And then I started going to university pretty early on the special program in which I was supposed to get my bachelor's degree a lot earlier. But then I made some other life choices. I had a pretty crazy childhood, and I not only dropped off academia, I just dropped off this whole anything that had to do with authority in general. Like, I had a big problem with authority. And it's only after the army that I realized that in order to truly bring myself to a more stable state as a person and heal and all of that stuff that people are very involved with today, I have to also make peace with, you know, institutions and authorities and understand what is the true value of humanity operating as a whole. Now, this is a much larger subject, but as far as the, you know, my connection to my younger years and grandfather as a physicist, I think that's the main relevance. I think it really set the tone of what I'm really interested in. And ever since then, since I can recall trying to understand reality and then later consciousness, is just animates my day-to-day behavior and movement more than anything else, no matter what else I do in life.
You said a few things that caught my attention. You said, I realized that nature doesn't keep secrets. And that for anybody who goes into a forest who goes into, you know, Egypt or any fascinating place around the world. But when you go to nature, it doesn't keep secrets, but it wants you to discover. It's only a matter of, do we understand it? And isn't this what keeps us motivated to search the truth all the time?
That's the leaning out that we do. So just like in order to take a step forward, you have to fall a little bit every time. That I feel like that's the same gesture when we're trying to understand.
So what first drew you to, aside from your grandfather, the nuclear physicist, what first drew you toward the mysteries of consciousness and reality? And was there a specific experience or idea that set you on this path?
Specifically what led to this discovery?
Yes.
There was a set. Well, first of all, my relationship with psychedelics in general, and then more specifically, a set of experiences that I've had in later years with DMT that made me first question whether this can potentially not just be in my mind, and then realize without a shadow of a doubt that it can't possibly be just in my head, or what we call in my head. I know that nowadays it, even saying that is contentious somehow. But it's just the absolute understanding, and I don't want to say certainty because it's the wrong phrase. It's not like I had to be convinced. It's just that I think understanding works like long exposure. It doesn't work linearly, which is what a lot of people think. You never understand linearly. You understand like a long exposure to the stars. You open the shutter, you wait long enough stars appear, and then after a little while, a coherent picture emerges. And I think all understanding works that way. So at a certain point of interacting with the psychedelic space, it became very clear that there's just simply no way that this is just what we call mind-made. And I didn't quite know enough about the science involved at the time, but experientially, and I'm purposefully not using the word intuitively because I feel like that word actually downgrades somehow the conviction there. But experientially, it was clear to me that it must be the case. There was long enough of an exposure in which the information was coherent enough for me to say, okay, I understand. This cannot be just in the head. And I would say these two things were the pivotal. So if you want to draw a triangle, it would be my general interest in understanding reality to its deepest core. My interest in psychedelics in general and fascination with them as a tool to observe certain things about our experience in the world. And then these sets of experiences that started happening that accompanied me for ever since, really, that were of a flavor that is so coherent as to just simply cannot belong in a family of what we call hallucinations or imagination, or it just couldn't be. And that those three things, I think, led us to where we are today.
You had experience in diverse environments and cultures, Moscow, Russia, Israel, and now at the United States. Do you see traces of those experiences in your current work?
Culturally?
Yes.
No. I'm very, what you call, I feel like this is a phrase that Alex Boehner used to describe his political orientation when he came on my podcast. He said, did he say orphan? I'm politically orphaned or something like that, politically homeless or something like that. And that's how I feel culturally as well. I'm trying to divorce myself from any cultural conviction as much as I possibly can. Of course, you can't fully do that because you're always expressing some set of memeplexes that of the culture that you're in. But no, I don't feel like I'm a Russian. I don't feel like I'm an Israeli. I feel like an American more than anything. But I think that's somewhat manufactured because I think anybody who made an effort to be here feels a certain amount of patriotism. So I think that psychologically maybe is the reason for that. But if I have to ask myself, like, what Russian operatives are in me? And if you want to say, well, maybe some stridence or rigidity, well, I actually think that these are more genetic. And I guess you can say, okay, but you were born in Russia, so that's Russian. But it's not cultural because I was too young when I left. Israeli Maybe a little bit of that, obviously, because Israelis, they have a very kind of like a direct attitude towards life. And maybe some of that, but I never really felt very comfortable culturally. And nowadays, Israel is under fire for a lot of different reasons. So just to make it clear to all the listeners that this is not any commentary on what Israel is as a whole, it's in the context of this insanity that's going on right now, is just that culturally, I did not feel like I belonged. And so, yeah, I know it's a long-winded answer, but I can't find any traces. In fact, if anything, I always try to make myself not culturally bound. People,
I guess I used a bad choice of words. You didn't need to go there, but what I meant to say, for example, in China, people who are in China tell me, you know, they do not believe in the paranormal. They do not believe in any superstition.
I understood you. That's exactly what I meant. Yeah.
All right.
I meant to say that culturally, no cultural convictions that I can recognize is something that I picked up on and just kind of followed it because the culture is complacent with it or believes in it.
Well, expounding on the question then, how do you compare, say, Russia, Israel, and the United States when it comes to these topics that we're discussing?
Which specific topics?
The consciousness, DMT, hallucinogens.
I don't think code. That's exactly the beauty of it, that it floats free from any culture. They're universal. So just like science is universal, there's no such thing as Russian math or American math. There's just math, right? Because that's a universal
language, right?
Well, domain of knowledge, right? And this is a very relevant point and very dear to my heart, and one that I'm trying to bring forth also in the film to the extent that we can deliver it, which is that the way that I see it, the only way humanity can pass through this stage is to adhere to as many universal elements as possible. And then the conversation begins, what are they? Because some people think certain things are universal when in fact they're very parochial. They're very, very immediate environment-like. They're not universally bound. People might believe they are, but they're not. And I think that's the important part. This is why science is such a great unifier, because if we want to go to space, I don't care what you believe might be the case about certain things. Certain things either work or don't, and that's just a universal thing. And I see the project that I'm involved with along those lines. So I completely see how what we see in the DMT space is universally true. And obviously, I'm not the first one to postulate this. This is a very, at this point, robust and growing field of study. And there's definitely a debate whether to what degree, you know, we can call that space real in the sense that it's there even when we're not looking. My conviction is that it's absolutely real even when we're not looking. And it is just as universal as quasars and stars and the speed of light or anything that we call physical and real. And we should investigate it as such. So in that sense, from the simplest way of interacting with just as an observation, I think you should always talk about it in terms of like objective reality. And I do think that trend ultimately will influence whether a civilization like our own makes it through this, whatever barrier we're actually passing through. Specifically, this negation of unification in general seems to be a very common one now. In politics, you see it obviously very clearly because people pointing fingers, but that was always the case. Now it's just exacerbated. But you see it even in kind of subcultural milieus. You can see different people expressing, even under the banner of expressing positive things, they seem to always pick something that they speak against. So I talk about this a lot in my life, but even people that you would consider, you know, like having the holistic approach or the spiritual approach, the ones that talk about connecting back to nature, to ourselves, to each other, which are beautiful visions. I'm all for it. But in the same breath, you can feel that there's a disdain to progress and science there's this like weird feeling of like this is artificial, and that's, which of course is completely incoherent because it's part of the natural course of things.
Thank you for listening. To unlock the full 2-hour interview, including video formats, downloads, transcripts, exclusive articles, and more, subscribe to Veritas Plus now. Gain access to our entire archive dating back to 2008. Just click subscribe at veritasproject.com. To listen to the rest and access all of our exclusive material, head over to the Veritas Plus member section or click the subscribe button at veritasproject.com. Don't forget to visit the Veritas store for a range of great products, including focused life force energy. Experience the benefits with a 15-day free trial of FLFE today. No credit card required. If you'd like to get in touch with me, be a guest on the program, have a guest suggestion, or want to provide feedback, just click the contact button on our website at veritasproject.com. Thank you for listening to The Veritas Project, because you don't want to believe, you want to know. What are you waiting for? Subscribe now at veritasproject.com.